going to a seminar this weekend. So how do you translate? If you're a mathematician, you go to a physics talk, they say something about supersymmetric field theory, and then they will derive some stuff about algebraic geometry. Like, how do you make that derivation? We're kind of slowly getting there. So today I think I will eventually be able to get to make some progress. But looking a bit closer at some things we made last time. We show that on or k cos cm / n, k plus m plus n is odd. There's a field theory. This is one of these forms on or k. The orthogonal complex on CM, and then that fake tensor in GLN. So it's some kind of funny gauge theory. But the key point is, things you need to know about this just build from product of smooth manifold and this complex supermanifold, and it's all the symmetries present here. Except with the exception that the only thing we need to preserve here is a holomorphic volume form in this supermanifold. We have to do some integration there. And the equations of motion, we can describe it as the space of angles on the space. There's a notion of angle on supermanifold, and the supermanifold, which are flat. On OK, homomorphic on CM / N, and in a compatible way. This is some kind of slightly abstractly defined field theory just built from this geometry, And we considered, and it turns out that twists of maximally of supersymmetric field theories very often have a nice description in this language. And the advantage, one advantage of this language is that it's more concise. You can just write down this space, and they say it's a field theory associated with that space, rather than saying, there's a connection, six scalar fields, such as 16 spinners, this action linked in this way, this supersymmetry. This is a more concise way to say it. So how did that work? So last time we saw that if we take the n equals 1 theory in 10 dimensions, is equal to, let's give a name for this theory. I'll call them Trin-Simons type or homomorphic Trin-Simons type. Because the action functional was, if the field is now over here, I'll write the action functional. It's the integral Trin-Simons form of this guy times the volume form. What's the inside? So the n equals 1 theory in 10 dimensions is equal to this Trin-Simons. Homomorphic Trin-Simons on C5. After twisting using any Q in the spin representation, which is invariant over C5. So this is a result proved by Laurent Poulidor. And from this result, we can dimensionalize these to get descriptions of all maximally supersymmetric field theories. Yes. Every maximally supersymmetric field theory comes from this guy by reducing. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I had a question about the holomorphic twisting. So in case of the holomorphic twisting, the holonomy was restricted and we had a spinner which was invariant under the restricted holonomy.
Yes.
So in that case, we didn't have to change the Lorentz group as we had to in case of Wooten twist, right?
Well, but in the case, we didn't have to change the Lorentz group either in case that the spinner was case you had a manifold whose structure could fix that spin.
Right. So the global supersymmetry
that we have preserved in case of the holomorphic twist
mm-hmm.
is still half integer spin. Is it correct?
Yes. That's right. It's twice SU5 instead of U5.
Okay.
So that's a good point. So in this case there's no OR symmetry group.
Right.
But in some cases we can use a U1 in the OR symmetry group to change that half integer spin to zero spin, in which case it would be invariant under U5 instead of SU5.
Is there any qualitative difference between having Q of half integer that squares to zero and Q of integer spin that squares to zero?
If we start from the idea that a field theory does not necessarily come equipped with an action of the Lorentz group, then it's just
right. Okay. Thanks.
So this can be put on, because it's invariant under SU5, it could be put on any manifold with this holonomy. So what happens if we reduce Ck, where k is less than 5, then we find we get the same kind of thing on Ck slash 5 times k. And this is a twist of Maxwell's supersymmetric theory. GK dimensions. So which twist? We can see which twist it is pretty clearly. So the 10-dimensional space of spinners, the space of spinners in 10 dimensions is S plus 16-dimensional. These are the supersymmetries of n equals 1 theory in 10 dimensions. But if I view 10 dimensions as 2k times 10 minus k, we get this description. S plus in 2k, S plus 10 minus 2k, plus S minus in 2k, tensor S minus. And so the spinner we're choosing in 10 dimensions, it's going to be invariant under SU5, and we assume we're writing 5 as k plus 5 minus k, such a way, of course, that SUk is inside of SU5. And if you think about where it must live in this decomposition, it's the 10-dimensional spinner, so Q, you can choose your conventions, will live in this guy, s plus 2k, tensor, s plus 10 minus 2k, and it will be decomposable. And invariant, that's like it's a pure tensor, under s k. So that tells you which supercharge you find in the lower dimension. So I'd like to focus on what happens when n equals 4 yang nodes. And in that case, the supersymmetries you can write as s plus 4d, answer w, plus s minus 4d, answer w star, where then w is a four-dimensional space, and our spinner, q, is of the form
So if W has a basis, say, E1 of E4, we can write Q is of the form psi tensor E1 for some element psi in E-dimensional space of tensors. So this is characteristic of a holomorphic twist. We take some element of S plus, we use that to twist. Okay, and we claimed that we found after twisting the holomorphic transcendence theory on C2/3.
Why do you want Q to be decomposable?
Well, we're looking at the one that comes from 10 dimensions. So if we're reducing 10 to 5 in this way, then we'll find something decomposable. Now, we could try to reduce from 10 to 5 in some other way by saying that the 5 directions we're reducing along. Sorry. We could put reducing 10 to 4 in some other way by saying that the 6 directions we're reducing along, maybe they're not a complex submanifold, maybe they involve some complex lines and some imaginary parts of some other complex lines or something. Then you would find not a decomposable tensor if you realized it. But in this case,
so if the spinner is not decomposable, then its stabilizer group is going to tend to be much smaller.
Yes.
So you'll just get other things, right, I guess.
Well, I mean, the stabilizer is a subgroup of spin 4 times SU4. So you can still find interesting subgroups in spin 4 times SU4, which stabilize a non-decomposable spinner.
Sorry, right. I meant kind of the stabilizer within spin 4 times identity was going to be.
Exactly. That's
going to be very simple.
Because it'll preserve two different complex structures. The intersection of two different complex structures or two or something. So there's a couple of things I'd like to say. I guess I'm going to have the best order to do some things. So one fun thing is that it's really easy to see how the other elements of the supersymmetry group act on this theory. And the other thing is that we can also try to link up really explicitly the fields here with the fields of physical angles for theory, which we looked at before. So maybe let me do the latter first, just to kind of make things a little clearer. So what do the fields look like? Well, there's this whole, since we've written things in the BV formalism, there's this whole big Dalbo complex of fields. But most of those are not the fields you would normally consider writing down at the beginning, because some of those will be ghosts, some of them will be anti-fields, and so on. However, we can write down some of them. There's a subsector of those fields which correspond to actual physical fields in the original theory. So that's what we'd like to do. So the fields. All the fields look like the Dalbo complex. C2, then I join 3 odd parameters, and tensor states in GS in the algebra G. So this twist we're considering, because it's a decomposable tensor, it only involves E1, actually lives in an n equals 1 subalgebra. N equals 4 algebra. So we can relate the fields to the fields of take N equals 4 theory and view it as an N equals 1 theory. If you view N equals 4 theory as an N equals 1 theory, it's N equals 1 with 3 complex scalars, because N equals 1 scalars can go in pairs. So N equals 4 is equal to N equals 1 plus 3 chiral. Okay.
see this decomposition. So we'll write things out by the power of epsilon. So things with no epsilon, omega 0, 1, c2, this is just the usual gauge field. And there's a term involving epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3, omega 0, 0. So this is well, E is part of the curvature. But I remember when we discussed the twist of n equals 1 gauge theory, we said it was equivalent to BF theory. This is the B, this is the F theory. The action of just these two fields is the BF action we wrote before. The point being that the fermionic interval, the Bayesian interval, picks out the coefficient of epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3, so we just get 1 for that. So the action we wrote down will pick out exactly this thing. Now the other pieces are just are going to be, of course, the three eigenvalued scalars. So epsilon I times omega 0, 0, insert G. This is these are the three chiral scalars. Epsilon I times omega 0, 1, so G. These are some fermions. Fermions, which are in the same n equals 1 chiral. Because, you know, 0, 1 forms, there's two of them, just as a representation of SU2, they're spinners. As a representation of spin 4, they're not quite spinners, they almost are. Just as a representation just of SU2, they're spinners. And this guy, this is also, you know, if you're familiar with n equals 1 supersymmetry, which most people probably not, you can often write it down as complex valued scalar, some fermions, and some auxiliary field. This guy is auxiliary field. And then the remaining stuff, epsilon I, epsilon j, because they're star, these are options. Okay. So, let's just sum up. N equals 4 gauge theory is this funny turn Simons theory on C2/3, but if we expand everything out in components, we can really match them with the thing fields one expects from the physical. So it's not really that mysterious. These two parts are just the n equals 1 gauge theory. On the rest of it are the three n equals 1 chiral multiplets. Okay. Questions?
When is it after twisting you get holomorphic turn Simons and then you just sort of expand the field contents of that? But is there any collapsing of the field contents under the twisting?
There is.
Or there be some...
Yes, that's a good point. So I suppose what I'm describing here is how would you try to prove the statement? Well, we've already given one proof relying on that 10-dimensional version. But if you wanted to prove it directly, you'd say, well, we're treating n equals 4 theory as an n equals 1 theory and twisting. All we know how to twist n equals 1 theory, that gives us holomorphic BF theory. So whatever we get, we'll find holomorphic BF theory. Here it is. And in that argument we gave before, some of the fields of n equals 1 gauge theory disappeared. They were cancelled with some spinners. Namely, the 1-0 component of A. And we could also have tried to analyze what happens if we twist the n equals 1 chiral multiplet. And then you would have found this double complex popping out. Some of the fields would go away, like the anti-chiral part would go away, but this double complex would be left. So yes, some fields do disappear.
Is there a relation between the epsilon i's
There's a group which acts on them, namely SU3, which rotates them. It's a symmetry of everything. That's SU3. The original Ohr symmetry was SU4.
Well, we've broken that down to SU3 because I chose E1. That breaks it down to SU3, which rotates these other three things.
Is that anything you mean? So one nice thing about this formulation of these theories is that any symmetry of this supermetric bone which preserves the holomorphic volume form will act on the theory. Clearly there are lots of symmetries in here. So we get lots of symmetries of the theory. So let me write down some of them. The following proposition. Vector fields, while with the obvious vector fields of translation, we also can do something like epsilon I related to j, and also d by the epsilon I. These act on C2/3. Well, therefore they act on the theory. Well, the claim is that these vector fields, like these odd ones here, just are the supersymmetries. Yeah, the other supersymmetries that we haven't used yet. And notice that d by the epsilon I, epsilon j, d by d, z, k, is delta I, j, d by d, z, k. So two of these fermionic symmetries will commute to a translation. Because that's the hallmark of having supersymmetry, having two fermionic symmetries commuting to a translation. So it would be, we already know that the theory must have a bunch of fermionic symmetries commuting to translation, just because the physical theory does. So these must be there, and you can really check that they are. So just to convince you that this is plausible.
So these are the eight super symmetries.
Yes, so we have six, nine. Right, because there's three of these guys and six of these guys.
Okay.
The first one is translation. This is bosonic.
Oh yes. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't even know what that was. These are the most interesting. And what we see is that there are nine remaining. Out of the 16 supersymmetries we started with, only nine survived the cohomology. So we start with. Physical supersymmetry, we have S plus answer C4. The bases say E1, E4, this is here, plus S minus answer C4. This is a dual copy, and that basis is E1 star, E4 star. So we started off with some Q, the psi tensor E1. And we're going to be interested in those, what are the supersymmetries that live in the twisted theory? Well, to survive the twisting procedure, we must have a supersymmetry which commutes with Q. So the symmetries
So this includes all of, since the commutator, remember in four dimensions, S plus tensor S minus is the vector representation. So something here, we can use in a non-trivial way with something here. So all of S plus tensor C4 needs to be P. And what about here? Well, what you find is bracketing with psi, bracketing with Q, will only be non-trivial on S minus tensor E1 star. And this will land inside the vector representation. So the, I'm not sure if I've explained this before, but the image of this guy will be those translations which are Q exact, because they'll be Q bracketed with something. Now, in a holomorphic theory, things like d by dz bar are Q exact. So the image surrounded by this is an important point. This is why it's hollow. Maybe to elaborate on this a little bit, because these are Q exact, you know, I can correlation functions will be holomorphic functions of position, because if I differentiate them with the sector z bar, I'm given zero. Okay, so what are we left? So the things which commute with Q are so
is that claim sort of supposed to be clear, or are you
that this is no, it's maybe a better way to say it is that the choice of spinner in here is the same as the choice of complex structure. Because the projectivization of this space is spin 4 divided by SU2, divided by U2. So the choice of the spinner gives rise to a choice of a half dimensional subspace, which is null, which we should think of as being the 0, 1 vectors. Now, we wrote down our field theory in a holomorphic language. Now, how does the complex structure we chose in our writing our field theory relate to the choice of spinner? And this discussion kind of shows they must be the same. But if you really go into the details, you can check they really are the same. Okay. So we see that S plus tensor C4 plus S minus tensor C3 means a Q. However, there are some things which are zero in Q cohomology, because we can also look at bracketing of Q with elements of spin 4 are the Orr symmetry. These will be zero. After twisting. And if you calculate what this is, this will be this space is S. Now, we have some element which is psi tensor E1. What can we get? By rotating that element by either SO4 or the Orr symmetry group or SO4. So if I take psi tensor E1, of course I can get psi tensor E2 or E3 or E4. I'll just take an appropriate matrix, say, psi to E1. So I get psi tensor C4. And of course I can also get anything in S plus tensor E1, because I just take an appropriate element of SU2 to rotate psi into something else. Plus, that's what you want. And these two spaces intersect along Q. So, passing to Q cohomology removes, here we remove 4, here we remove 2, but I think they have a common intersection. So, we're actually removing 5. So, Q cohomology gives something like psi prime, tensor E2, E3, 4. These three spinners here, and these six guys there for a total of 9. So 3 plus 6 supersymmetries survive, and these are by the epsilon pi, this 1, 2, 3, and epsilon pi divided by j. There are 3 of these, and there are 6 of these. So these ones you wrote down on the supermanifold are exactly what you find. Supersymmetries which are not exact, and which you communicate. Okay, any questions? So here's a really fun fact. Maybe I'll save the fun fact and then maybe do an example to go on. So we saw that maximally supersymmetric theory in GK, less than 10 dimensions, is holomorphic chain Simons on CK / 5-k, so we already saw this. And the theorem is that the residual supersymmetries in every case are precisely vector fields. Epsilon I divided by ZJ and ZI divided by epsilon I. So there's K, phi minus K of those, and there's phi minus K of those. So this happens in every case. So this is contained in a paper a little bit sealed a couple of months ago. So what happens in the odd dimensional case? So the second part of the theorem. The second part of the theorem will put us in a situation where we have some feeling for all maximally supersymmetric theories and all of their supersymmetries is in 2k plus 1 dimensions. Maximally supersymmetric theory is after twisting. This kind of funny Truman Simons theory we will be discussing on, but now, well, so we're taking this one direction to get something odd, we have to have at least one real direction. So or times ck / 4 minus k. And again, the residual supersymmetry is given by the same formula. Epsilon divided by CJ divided by epsilon.
So I wanted to do some calculation translating some statement in physics into algebraic geometry. There's like an infinite number of ones we could choose. I thought the following one is nice. So everybody knows that if you're familiar with the physics literature, that you can relate the partition function of maximally supersymmetric gauge theory in five dimensions to the order characteristic of the moduli space of ins and outs. And you can also relate, say, the Hilbert space of this theory to the cohomology of differential forms in the moduli ins and outs. So I'd like to explain this language why that's true. So suppose you take X, a complex surface, and we take L, which is a line model. On X, and we're going to consider the twist of maximally supersymmetric theory on X times R. The same twist we use here in the local case, which described it as something on R times C2. And the reason I introduced a line bundle, maybe I don't want to go into details quite so, all the details, but when we globalize this story, we can make some of the odd directions live in some non-trivial vector bundle if we want to. And so here, by this description, this is this kind of transcendence theory on space, is R times some supermanifold. The supermanifold locally should be C2/2, two odd, two even directions. And I chose a line bundle. That line bundle will be one of the odd directions. So I know that's pi L. And the other odd directions will be the inverse of the canonical bundle tends to L inverse. This is odd like two bundle. The reason that the tensor product of these two guys has to be the inverse of the canonical bundle is that to write down the action function of this supermanifold has to have a volume form. So this condition makes this supermanifold a supercollabial. Okay, so we want to try to calculate the Hilbert space. So we find, the first thing we want to do is we'll calculate the equations of motion of the theory are P bundles on, let's call this supermanifold X tilde. Or cos X tilde, which are holomorphic on X tilde and flat on R in a compatible way. For each point here, I find a holomorphic bundle on the supermanifold, and if I move in this time direction, I get some parallel transport map, which is isomorphism holomorphic bundles. So I've chosen this time direction to be non-compact, and the space we get actually doesn't depend on how big we make it. So this space we could think of as being the phase space of the theory. In general, the phase space of the theory is the equations of motion on some small, near a space-like slice. So this is the phase space. Another way to describe it is we don't really have to say what happens here because I can just choose some value of time, and what happens for every other value point in this line is determined by parallel transport. So this space is equal to the space of holomorphic bundles
x. And it's also equal to the phase space. Now you can check. Everybody knows, for example, that holomorphic G-bundles on the K3 surface are holomorphic symplectic. This is a general feature of these kinds of things. The fact that this is super Calabi-Yau implies that this is super symplectic. If you further analyze the geometry, I'm a bit sketchy here, you'll realize that what this the other odd direction does means that we're left with the cotangent bundle if one has just one of them. This is the same as a cotangent bundle of bundy of pi L. Now, what's Bundy of pi about? Pi is equal to the space of G-bundles on X together with some phi on X, L, tensor, the adjunct bundle. That's what this pi about does. Great, so now we kind of know the answer. I thought that was a bit fast, but it would be a useful thing to really go through this carefully if you like this language. Now we know the answer, we know what the Hilbert space is. The Hilbert space is the space of half densities on this manifold. So maybe, let's give that another way to describe it. In the case L is trivial, Bundy C0 slash 1 times X. It's a bit of mass. The usual, you know, we can take maps inside usual adjoint properties. And this is the odd tangent bundle of Bundy. The conclusion we reach is if L is trivial, the Hilbert space is equal to functions, say the Dalbo cohomology of the odd tangent bundle on G of X. And this is the same. Having this odd tangent bundle here means we pick functions on it means we pick up the exterior powers of this. So we end up with differential forms great. This is nice. This is what is written down in analysis a bit like this appears in one of a paper of Vafa and Witten from 1995, where they study the partition function of n equals 4 gauge theory in 4 dimensions, which is obtained by reducing this theory on a circle. Well, the partition function is just the dimension of the Hilbert space, so we conclude we want to think about the partition function. The partition function on a circle is going to be the Euler characteristic of G of X. In the solvey of it sometimes, this matches what appears in the literature. So maybe I'll have to go over an example like this again next time, because I think this is the kind of thing I'd really like people to be able to do. It's like a
can you just sort of rewrite these statements and just to be able to translate physics into math in a quick way? Any questions about this stuff? With this example? I know what you're quickly. Question Dylan or?
Kind of was struggling a little bit even just in the beginning. Could you were saying the your claim was the equations of motion, I should believe just is the phase space here?
Yes.
So there's no additional data in choosing how to extend a holomorphic G bundle on X tilde in a flat way in the R direction? There's like no choices?
Yes. Well, if you forget about this guy, the space of flat bundles on R is the same as the space of flat bundles on a point. With BG. Like a flat bundle is just every point. I'm on a point for every interval and isomorphisms. Because it's a topological thing and because this is contractible.
Okay.
It might have been better to say, instead of saying or, to take a very small interval. And then this is the kind of thing you're familiar with, the fields evolve around the x4. What you really do is you get rid of that from the constructed phase space, right?
Yeah, sure. So if you wrote this at the level of kind of tangent complexes or whatever and had the sort of field contents, you would be kind of reducing and to see the right symplectiness that you would want in these cases, you would still be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Rand complex here, and there's some Volvo complex here. Okay, any questions? Is it probably went way too much. If you want, as an exercise, you can try to do like an analogous calculation in, I don't know, 7 dimensions, 3 dimensions. You could do 6 dimensions that are related to the elliptic genus of Winspan moduli space. That's a fun way to do.
Related to the
elliptic genus of instead of this is quantum mechanics in Winspan moduli space. Elliptic genus in Winspan moduli space. And there's some paper of digraphs from the mid-90s.